You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for July 5th, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside Egypt, a land of contrasts, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Hey, everybody.
Hello, everyone.
I have a couple things to say about Egypt. We are not a foreign policy podcast, and I don't think either of us pretend to be experts in foreign policy. But I did want to say a couple things about Egypt, if you don't mind. I really do trust the Egyptian people to govern themselves. And democracy is messy, and they will get there. I really do have faith in that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, there's been a lot of debate on television and so forth about we have guidelines, apparently, in the United States that we cut off aid when a government is overthrown by the military, and that there are ways around this. Apparently, the check has already cleared for this year. Over in Egypt, so mm-hmm. Our check. So they have a year before they have to resolve what to do about our military and whatever aid we're giving to the Egyptians. But in a perfect world, in my perfect alternate universe, we would spend as much time worrying about theocracies as we do about military juntas.
Yeah, everywhere.
Everywhere, and including the United States. And it boggles my mind of all, you know, there's lots and lots of hypocrisy on the right, but the hypocrisy of screaming about the Muslim Brotherhood when Michelle Bachmann or Pammy Atlas
just
blows my mind.
Gotta wear those special glasses.
Well, and, you know, Pammy doesn't mind if AIPAC runs the United States and all of its foreign policy, and Michelle Bachmann thinks that the religious right should run everything, so...
Yeah,
Why not the Muslim Brotherhood? Why is it North Carolina passes a Sharia law anti-abortion bill? Stop it.
Because God wants you to do that.
Yeah, right.
You got the right guy. You tuned into the right channel. You got the.
I did want to get that in. If you're bent out of shape about the Muslim Brotherhood running Egypt, we've got lots of sins at home to deal with. Well, in that regard.
And that leads me to two things, because I am also not a foreign policy expert. I was in Egypt once for about 3 hours at the airport, and then we left. And that is all I know about
asylum.
Yeah, that's all I know about Egypt on the ground. I was 7 years old, and we were coming home from overseas. Here's what I know. The first recommendation I have, I would agree with you, but I'd add to it. The idea of going after theocracies. Mm-hmm. I'd also say, I also reiterate that it should be the policy of this country that we spend dollar for dollar. What we spend on the military should be spent dollar for dollar also on alternate energy.
That's a good idea.
Since we tend to go to war in places that have shit we want, and that shit usually involves oil mm-hmm. or something like it. Every dollar you spend on the military, however you define the military, all the way out to the NSA, all the way out to spying on people, every dollar should be matched dollar for dollar with expenditures on solar
and wind. Yeah.
Clean fusion, if you can ever figure out a way to do it, on tidal, geothermal, whatever, wherever
else. Are you suggesting that we flush good military dollars on Solyndra? Yes, you are. Let's experiment.
Yes, we used to do that.
Maybe fail.
We used to be proud of doing that. We used to – rockets blew up on the launch pad when we were trying to get into space, and people were worried. But other people were like, no, fuck it. We have to go. This is something we as a country have to do, and private industry will never sink the amount of time and money into this that is required. So we're just going to do this, and we did. So
while we're talking about just perfect worlds and good ideas and so forth that we have,
sure.
I think Barack Obama should – totally outside of what Congress decides to do about immigration and so forth, Barack Obama should instruct the State Department to issue voter ID
uh-huh.
in the form of a variation on the passport
mm-hmm.
to anyone in the United States who can prove that they have lived here more than 50 years. Period.
Period. Free. Free of charge.
Free.
And we should have a fleet of buses.
Yep. Buses and free boats, photos and free
trains.
Everything.
They go to your neighborhood. They do it for the Night Ministry in Chicago.
Yep. And
they
take a picture and...
They do it for blood drives. They yep. do it for libraries. They do it for job training and workforce development. You can
and all you need is an electric bill with your name on it.
Mm-hmm.
And...
And we're done.
We're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it'll be called your Obama ID.
Your free Obama ID.
Yeah.
Get
and we're
that?
Giving them away. We're giving them away. And that's... And you
that's
just... And we're done.
Because this is war.
And we'll start in the red states and work our way out to the places. And this is... I won't dwell on this today, but the North Carolina thing is, again, the people, the not a dime's worth of difference people have the luxury of saying that because they focus on one issue or two issues. If you have a vagina, if you're poor, if you're elderly, if you need health care, you don't have that luxury. And if you would like to argue from some much more aloof and ivory tower place that the two sides are equally corrupt, equally awful, equally pernicious, equally irredeemable, that's fine. You have the right to do that, and I don't have any problem with that. But please don't be surprised when people who actually see their lives measurably improved when Democrats control their local state or their local legislators and see their lives measurably
diminished absolutely.
But Republicans take over, laugh in your face.
Yep.
Because their reality is not your reality. And the surest and swiftest way to make enemies of those people who are actually naturally your allies
mm-hmm.
is to call them stupid
yep.
and call them cultists and smear them and sneer at them and say that their issues, you know, shut up and get me a fucking sandwich, broad.
Yeah, right.
Because that is that reeks of elitism. White, male, usually male elitism.
Well, and I also think this is a conspiracy. That these states, Ohio, North Carolina, and Texas, are engaged. Joy Reid had something about that she has discovered, you know, sort of where the language of all of these laws has come from. And it's a right-wing think tank. And this conspiracy is designed to move this issue to Antonin Scalia's desk.
Yes.
And that's it.
Yes.
So we have to fight it at the ballot box before we sue, is my personal opinion, because if it goes to Scalia's desk, we're sunk.
And we'll
and that's what they want.
And will Clarence Thomas recuse himself just because his wife
no,
took 600
fuck
grand
that.
From
oh,
the
man.
Heritage? Oh,
no.
These are bought and paid for politicians who act as judges.
Yep.
And if they succeed in putting all these landmines in state legislatures that they expect to blow these things into the Supreme Court, you can kiss your right to choice goodbye. It's gone, and it'll be gone forever.
And I want to know who's going to take away Meghan McCain's birth control.
Yeah, well, Meghan McCain's rich.
That's the point. She can fly to Norway for her birth control tomorrow.
It's almost like the legitimate concerns of privileged people and the concerns of everyday concerns of poor and middle class people are getting further and further apart.
Really?
Yeah, it's weird. And sometimes when the poor folks say, yeah, that's all great, all of these other concerns of yours are interesting and shit, but my kid's school is falling apart. Yeah. I can't get health care. There's no grocery store within 20 miles of my house that sells anything worth eating.
Yep.
Responding to people like that's just too fucking bad, but let's wait for the libertarians to come along and save us. You should stop voting Democratic because the libertarians, what you need is a third party.
What you need is freedom.
What you need is food and a house and a job. And then we'll talk about your political inclinations. But until you have those things, your concerns are not interesting to me. And I want to say one more thing about Egypt. And that is, I was groggy this morning when reading David Brooks's column.
Mm-hmm.
So I jumped in the middle of it.
Oh.
And I didn't really, but I'm going to say that I did. And I'd like to read you just a couple of quotes from David Brooks, because he has really come out in an astonishing way and directly taken on the Republican Party in ways I never thought David Brooks would do.
Well, that's fine. And I'm going to allow it.
Okay. All right. I'm doing this all.
I want to let everyone know that this is my birthday month.
Yeah.
July 16th, which is the same day as Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell. And you.
Barbara Stanwyck. More more to the point, Barbara Stanwyck.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, I am the reincarnation of Barbara Stanwyck.
Indeed.
anyway, July 16th, I turned 50.
Yeah.
And thank you to everyone that's already sent me something. You guys are just amazing. Anyway, for my birthday month from Driftglass, he's going to not mention a pundit whose initials are GG.
Right. Well, and I'm not going to do that anyway. I was going to stop drinking anyway, Bluegrass. I swear to God. I can quit at any time.
DB is all right.
Yeah.
So,
well, but I wanted to mention that this astonishing column by David Brooks, this remarkable column where he just puts down the centrist bullshit, you know, both sides are wrong. Speaking of, you know, both sides, people drunk on both siderism. David Brooks finally puts down the both sider thing and just picks up the nearest blunt object and beats the crap out of the Republican Party. It was remarkable. So let me just read you a few quotes.
Sure.
Democracy, the argument goes, will eventually calm extremism. But these people come to office with radical beliefs. And the idea is that when they have to fix potholes and worry about credit ratings and popular opinion, government will make them more moderate. Except that's not true. They reject, as David Brooks says, pluralism and secular democracy and to some extent modernity. When you elect fanatics, they continue. When you elect fanatics, they have not advanced democracy. You've empowered people who are going to wind up subverting democracy. The important thing is to get people like that out of power.
Wow, he's just slamming the Tea Party.
He is, except he's talking about the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, of course he is.
Yeah, so Michelle Bachmann, Pammy Atlas, and David Brooks
all line
up behind A, people who aren't David Brooks are incapable of governing themselves, and B, basically, when it's someone else who's rubbing shit in their hair, that's just awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, David, maybe you want to look at the beam in your own eye before you go after the moat in the Egyptian election. Mm-hmm.
And that's my point about theocracy. And
absolutely.
Did you see the picture of the guy in Texas holding up the I regret my abortion sign?
No.
He had a beard. Big Texan with a beard holding up a sign that said, I regret my abortion.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
And Wonkette said, something needs to be done about all these men in Texas having abortions because none of them are happy now.
Yeah.
So Wonkette's solution is, here's your sign.
Yeah, just go over there and hold it up. Okay, I'm doing my part. I'm doing my bit.
And can I do a shout out to Thomas Roberts?
Sure.
Thomas Roberts, we love him. We just love him. Mm-hmm. He's MSNBC, and he was on Morning Joe on Wednesday. And guess who was hosting for Morning Joe this week? You'll never guess.
Mark Halperin?
Mark Halperin. Oh. Mark Halperin was hosting, yeah. Nicole Wallace was all bent out of shape. She was on also talking about how, oh, you know, we shouldn't be lionizing Wendy Davis for heroism.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomas Roberts just slammed her and said, you know, these women who do not have to worry about reproductive rights for many different reasons, including class, age and class. But he wasn't trying to smack anyone about age. But this woman on woman put down that these very privileged women want to tisk tisk Wendy Davis and diminish her heroism.
You mean like Peggy Noonan?
Right. Peggy Noonan and Nicole Wallace and these folks. And he said, quote, Republican men are far too worried about the sanctity of sperm over a woman's right to choose.
Mm-hmm.
He said that on television, and I'm very proud of him for doing that. When I heard about this, it was funny because the link that I was actually from a right-wing website getting all bent out of shape about Thomas Roberts and his liberal agenda.
Yeah.
On Morning Joe, okay?
Yeah.
That's a knee slapper. But Thomas Roberts, so the place that I read the quote initially was a right-wing website, and so I wanted to find other sources that had quoted him to make sure it was accurate. And Googling Thomas Roberts sperm
don't
was
do
the
it.
Highlight of my Thursday.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah. All right. We love you, Thomas.
Yes. And good on you for using the S word, being sanctified on the air.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I believe you wanted to chat a little bit about the war on ladies.
Just a little bit. Monday night, you came home from an event you had to attend, and I was basically in tears watching Chris Hayes. And I don't like being angry. I don't feel that anger makes me smarter. Being angry and indignant makes me look smarter. And I don't want to be at war with these folks, but they certainly have declared war on us.
They certainly have.
And I was grateful, I have to say, I was grateful for the Democrats in North Carolina who stood up and said, you have no idea, you Republican guys who are voting on this, what is about to come down on you. And that women are going to be angry with you and you'd better prepare for that. And that's, I don't know what else to say. I'm just furious and I hate being furious, but I'm furious.
And the way, as you pointed out, one way to stopgap this, one way to push back, it would be, you know, Democratic governors in these
states.
That's
it. Just we can't win if we can't win the state house, just get a Democratic governor in there.
And just stand in their way.
And stand in their way. And I hate that that means that you are simply, you know, pulling a Tea Party and blocking everything that they want to do. But if that's what it takes to bring sanity to this, is just and most people, when you really dig down into their opinions, you know, no one likes abortion. That I'm to the point where I've just sort of had it with the demonization of people who've had abortions. No one wants to do that. No one plans to do that. But most people want it to be available when it's necessary. And if you dig down and really have a conversation with a pro-life person and you get into all this, what if that, that should be available. These legislators are not making those exceptions.
No.
And let's make it available. Let's make it private. And
Well, it's
one of the things that has come out this week is perhaps we need more women who've had abortions to come forward. The way and making a link between that and the gay movement, that because so many gay people have come out, that then makes that normalizes being gay, and people realize when they see a gay person that they are normal and, you know, not
just like us.
They're just like us, and they're raising their kids and they care about schools. But to me, that's the wrong direction to go in, because the whole point of Roe v. Wade and the whole point of what happens to you, the whole point of the right to this is privacy.
Yeah.
And privacy between you and your doctor, and privacy between you and your health care. And the idea that you have to somehow make public your health care decision in order to win the right to have health care,
well,
is bullshit.
Your marriage is private. You know,
and that's you know, that's what's happened with the Lawrence v. Texas thing, too.
But nobody celebrates an abortion. Nobody holds a ceremony to sanctify. It's something that it's a medical procedure.
We would if men got one.
Exactly. As the joke goes, we certainly would. It would be a sacrament if men had to have abortions. But if men had to have abortions, they'd be women and they'd still be screwed.
Yeah.
So,
so true.
But there is abroad in the land, all over the place, this really pernicious, and I'm guilty of it myself from time to time, of really just demonizing anyone who doesn't agree with you 100%. Mm-hmm. And stripping those people of any nuance or subtlety or any, you know, any reason for their opinion other than they must be arguing from bad faith. Or they must be.
Or they're evil.
Or they're evil or they're dupes.
And we, like you said, we've been guilty of that.
Yeah.
We have been guilty of that. Yeah.
But I really do. I really have less sympathy for people who are making this argument when they make it on behalf of people who are less powerful than themselves. Mm-hmm. When they say poor people should change the way they behave.
Yep.
Women should change the way they behave. Are you poor? No. Are you a woman? No. But other people should sacrifice for my political ideology, for my view of the world. And once you have sacrificed, once you've given up your rights, once you've let the right colonize your vagina, once you've overthrown the duopoly of the Democratic and Republican Party and let Rand Paul be president, then somehow magically all of the problems that you have will all go away. Mm-hmm. And I think it's perfectly legitimate to believe that, but you have an affirmative duty to prove it. Mm-hmm. You can't just sit and say, well, yeah, everybody but me sucks and everybody but my team sucks, and we're just going to stay aloof from the political contest and bitch about how everyone's bad but us. And then once we're in power, all these problems will sort of melt away. Well, exactly how will that work?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly how?
Can we, Driftglass, can we segue from that conversation into who gets to be a journalist? Because I think
yes.
that's exactly
yes.
where we want to go. And we had a letter from our friend Wayne this uh-huh. week.
Yes.
This morning, I opened my email. And this is right. He's just on the same wavelength we are this week, which is uh-huh. great. He writes, I think the term objective is a red herring. Fair and balanced is a bad joke, of course. Can't think of an alternative term that would identify the positive ideal without burdening it with a whole lot of negative or at least distracting freight. Got any suggestions? By definition, on this sublunary planet, ideals can never be fully realized. So, no such thing as objective journalism. Of course not. No such thing as fair and balanced journalism. Of course not. But does it matter which ideals a journalist strives to realize? By which standards he or she chooses to be measured.
Yeah.
I think both the standards and the openness and honesty with which one embraces them are truly important. That's what's so wrong about the claimed ideal of fairness and balance. When Fox News tries to claim that they strive toward that ideal, they're cynically lying, or in individual cases, to be generous, self-deceiving. When the corporate media pretend to embrace that false ideal, whether explicitly or implicitly, they're being equally cynical or self-deceiving. Could any rational person really believe that doing a he said, she said with a corporate stooge or conspiracy freak on one side and a legitimate scientist on the other is truly fair or balanced? And Wayne goes on to talk about legitimate science being, can you prove it?
Yeah.
And then his letter really made me think of Rachel Maddow and her interest in getting it right, and when she gets it wrong, correcting it. And that you really get a sense from her that the pursuit of accuracy, she has a bias, and she's yes. not shy about that.
Yes.
But her pursuit of accuracy is really intense.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, to me, is journalism.
Yeah, it's, you know, all of the, for all of the gonzo-ism that Hunter Thompson did, he was a very good reporter.
Mm-hmm.
He got his facts right.
Mm-hmm.
And for all of the above the bar, in the bar, back alley conversations that Royko had, Mike Royko got the facts right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many he ever had to retract, but he was really good about getting down and talking to third tier mobsters and ward healers and listening to them and hearing their voice and making sure their voice found a place on the page. And I don't know who gets to be a journalist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you have one set of problems if you say everyone's a journalist.
Yeah.
And okay, that means I'm a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've said before, that means if I want to have a leak, if I want to slander a third party, or if I want to just bash the crap out of them, all I really have to do is say that you, Blue Gal, leaked it to me. And I can do that as an anonymous leaker. I can just tell you that I can report that this anonymous source who knows a lot about the subject said that so-and-so is a, you know.
Or make it about Scalia, please.
Yeah, yes, is a rabid goat. You know, likes getting it on with goats.
Right.
Poor goats. They always get the worst.
You mean like Eric Erickson said yeah. about another Supreme Court justice? Yeah.
And
okay.
And then I'm free to speculate about his motives for doing this. And is it deep-seated childhood abuse or whatever? I don't know what I would invent a story about Scalia about. But it leaves me free.
Mm-hmm.
What this means is that it means that Judith Miller is a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
It means that David Gregory is a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
It means that anybody's a journalist. And that, I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm saying that that is one alternative.
Yeah.
And if well, it...
And this is the argument that that NBC News host was making back in the day about I'm up against a guy named Vinny.
Yeah.
Oh, he's always on Jon Stewart, too.
Oh, yeah. Brian Williams.
Brian Williams. Yeah. That's it. Thank you. Brian Williams saying, I'm up against, you know, I've had honed my craft and gone to school and have years of experience in Washington and so forth. And all of a sudden, I'm up against a guy named Vinny in a second-story walk-up in a bathrobe. And I'm supposed to be equal to him.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him at the time on my video blog long ago, there's no competition there at all. You're never going to be up against me, Brian Williams. And one of the reasons that he's never going to be up against me is that the Beltway media failed on the war. They failed us.
Miserably.
Miserably. And you and I and the rest of the left-wing blogosphere would not exist.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that. We would not exist.
Yeah.
If the Beltway media had done their job and vetted the Iraq war.
Well, and let's walk back journalism a little bit to you know pre-Bush administration and see how we got where we're at.
Mm-hmm.
That might be helpful. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to know what newspapers and journalism used to be like, a lot, I'm not saying across the board, but a lot, go watch The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Yeah. Yeah.
And look at Dutton Peabody. Who's a drunk, the town drunk, and a rumor monger, and he's the editor and publisher of the Shinbone newspaper. And a generation later, he's venerated and has a picture on a wall.
Mm-hmm.
But he is basically a corrupt, gossip-mongering crusader who is deeply flawed and deeply lazy and has lots of problems and is dedicated to the freedom of the press and is a bit of a coward, although when pushed he will take the right side.
Well, and all of the Frank Capra movies from the 30s and 40s, newspapers are partisan.
Yeah,
they're hackish. They're not always interested in the truth if it will get them supporting the mayor or deriding the mayor. It just depends on what side they're on.
go rent a copy of His Girl Friday.
Yeah.
You know, this
sensationalism is the point.
And yet, absolutely, under all of that, if you're a really good reporter, you're interested in the facts of the story, deeply interested in the facts of the story, and you're interested in the larger social implications of those facts. Mm-hmm. Then along comes the modern industrial age, post-war.
By the way,
America.
we're going to get letters. His Girl Friday was not Frank Capra.
No, I'm saying, in addition to that, no, His Girl Friday was
Preston Sturges, right?
Preston Sturges was a remake of The Front Page. No, I'm just saying, if you, there are lots of good examples out there in the cinema world of
Excuse me. Whoa. Directed by Howard Hawks. I'm so sorry. Okay. We wanted to get that right.
But I stand by my...
We have to be accurate.
Yes, we do. There are lots of good examples of how newspapers were run. Mark Twain was a reporter, and he wrote slanderous, gossip-mongering, awful crap. And so then came corporate America, and they moved into air-conditioned offices, and they stopped drinking at their desk, and it turned into a profession.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a thing you go to school for, and it became homogenized. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing either. I'm saying that's what happened. And out of that, you get... At the high end, you get Walter Cronkite. You get someone like that, a very trustworthy, right down the middle straight shooter. Now, here's what happens next, as far as my thumbnail history of journalism goes. You get basically the Bercher right and the Archie Bunker right furious that the media refuses to take their paranoia and their issues seriously. And they start militating against the liberal media, the Jewish-controlled media who are pushing that awful liberal agenda and who don't like Richard Nixon. Clearly, they've got a thing against Richard Nixon, and on and on and on and on. So you have this sort of corporate media that's doing its thing, and then you have the right wing, starting with Roger Ailes as Richard Nixon's communication director, saying, you know, here's something we could do. We can start our own television system, GOP TV. And we will get the truth out unfiltered by the horrible left-leaning socialist, communist, liberal, pinko bias that clearly drives the media. And that's how you get Fox News. And that's how you get right-wing radio. And then you marshal all of these crazies on the right to angrily attack, in force, as one, the media every time they don't report the story the way you want it reported.
Mm-hmm.
And you scare the crap out of them. You I believe in under Reagan, it used to be called truth squatting. Mm-hmm. That they used to ask.
Well, that was Nixon too.
Well, the media used to, the White House press corps used to ask the president all kinds of hard questions. And under Reagan, they really shoved back hard. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And basically, how dare you make the president look stupid? Who do you think you are, et cetera, et cetera. And they intimidated. They cowed the media. They got them to back off. And it became a thing where you have now a centrist media where news is now a profit center. And they're very concerned about not offending the audience. And then you have conservatives who've made a complete, who are in the process at this point of building a separate right-wing reality bubble where everything is a liberal's fault. Everything is a liberal conspiracy. Ronald Reagan was a saint, by God. And clearly the reason you're not hearing our stories out there is because the liberals still control the media, and we need to keep pushing back harder and harder and harder. They start and they incorporate that media with their political machine and turn it into this very efficient engine for turning out voters and making money. This made Roger Ailes very rich. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the day, you have a centrist media who are terrified of being beaten up by conservatives, and you have a conservative media who are constantly beating them up. So...
Well, and you have a careerist media.
Yes.
That's very well paid.
Yes. And you don't want to risk
the well paid division of the Washington, D.C. media wants to go to cocktail parties with senators
and not
get the story from by being inside. And when power is an aphrodisiac, in addition to I want to keep my cushy six-figure job, you're not going to make those kind of waves. No. So.
And so you have at the low point, mm-hmm. you have these centrist media dominated by people like David Brooks, although he was working for the Weekly Standard at the time. Mm-hmm. And you have Republican media, conservative media. You have Rush Limbaugh as he was called in 1994 when the Republicans took over Congress. He was the majority maker. They credited Rush Limbaugh for winning that election. Whether it's true or not, they believed it was true. So you have two media, conservative, aggressive, pushing all the time with a clear political agenda, which they constantly lie about. And you have a centrist media mm-hmm. who the only way they can keep the Republicans at bay, the only way they can keep the conservatives at bay is by writing every story as if there was an equally and oppositely bad liberal somewhere who was doing something equally and oppositely bad and wrong, so that no matter how crazy the Republicans get, there's always a liberal to beat up on. There's always a hippie to punch. Mm-hmm. And that's the media. And then you end up in the middle of the Iraq War. And it turns out the conservative media was lying all the time. And the centrist media was lying all the time. And that's when you start to see the rise of blogging, and you start to see the rise of MSNBC. And you start to see people pushing back in a focused, coordinated way against this terribly smothering narrative that is now completely dominating the media landscape. You know, your choice for a while there was, do I watch Meet the Press mm-hmm. or do I listen to Rush Limbaugh? Those were your two universes. You go, do I watch Fox News or do I watch This Week with George Stephanopoulos or whoever the hell it was? This Week with David Brinkley. That was it. Mm-hmm. Now, David Brooks or Bill Kristol. These are your two choices. And liberals, a beaten and benighted minority, finally pushed back against that, finally reacted against that. So this is just by way of history how we got where we are now. It was always the status quo reacting to an external stimulus. So you have corporate media reacting to conservative push, and now you have the centrist conservative media reacting to the liberal pushback. Mm-hmm. And that brings us up to MSNBC and bloggers and so forth. Mm-hmm. And here we are in the present time. And I forget how we got here. But it was sort of a history of the media and who gets to be a reporter in this world.
Yep. Well, and there's been a lot of writing done about reporters' salaries. You have to go to J school graduates, journalism school graduates, to find out starting salaries and so forth. You're never going to find out what David Gregory actually makes.
No, or who he's actually married to.
No one's ever going to talk about that.
No.
But it's fascinating to me that, you know, that they'll talk about average salaries,
yeah.
starting salaries and so
sure.
forth. And I did find something at one of the news wires that the annual mean wage for a reporter, quote unquote, in Washington, D.C. And, you know, this is average and this is reporter and this is not, you know, Chuck Todd. OK, right. Although right. he's factored in. But if you're in Washington, D.C., the annual mean wage is $71,450, which is probably what a middle class person lives on. I mean, you rent an apartment with that. You know, you're not living in a $4 million house.
Yeah.
And if you live in Nebraska, it's $24,920, which, you know, given cost of living, you're definitely going to make a lot less.
Uh-huh.
And nationwide, but, you know, nationwide is hard to say because you're talking about averaging Nebraska with D.C., so that's kind of unfair. Mm-hmm. There is a Beltway Media White House correspondent that they make a lot of money.
They do.
On-air talent makes a lot of money.
I don't know who gets to be a journalist and who doesn't, because I know that if you are the person who says everybody should be a journalist, you have, as I said, one set of problems. Everybody from Jeff Gannon to Judith Miller to me gets to be a journalist. Gets to be that's fine, and that is one alternative. The other alternative is that somebody has a set of standards, and the problem then becomes who gets to set the standards.
Yeah.
And how will they hold them? The only definition I can come up with is make your biases known.
Mm-hmm. Make your biases known, and then also correct yourself.
Yeah. Correct yourself when you're wrong.
Yeah.
And this is the hard one. This is the one I struggle with. I try to do a good job, and occasionally I fail. But holding yourself to your own rules, whatever your rules are. What happens when someone turns around and says, yeah, but you did exactly what you said those bad people over there are doing? What do you do then? I'm thinking specifically of pardon me?
Excuse me. Sorry,
I'm thinking specifically of a blog by a novelist and writer and a libertarian, I think it'd be fair to say, who will not in any way violate your birthday month, et cetera, but who very conveniently put in their sidebar their own personal rules for how you should conduct yourself in their comment section. It wasn't like you have to do this, but really, if you're trying to persuade people, if you're trying to make a persuasive argument, insulting people and denigrating them and calling them stupid is really not helpful. You can do it, but it's basically masturbation because nobody's mind gets changed. Nobody's minds are changed by calling them a fucking moron. Now, I do that a lot, but the people I'm referring to usually have made it very clear they're never going to change their mind. They're dug in like ticks to their right-wing ideology. They have spent decades in complete denial of facts. They are in a definite, measurable downward spiral, and they're never going to leave. And I don't feel particularly bad about pointing that out. So this gentleman has a sidebar in which he lists all the things that you shouldn't do, like being insulting and being denigrating. And think of it as the golden rule. How are you persuaded? What was the last time you were persuaded by someone calling you an asshole cultist to your face? And then you flip over to his lead post, in which he goes right after people who disagree with him as asshole cultists who see things only their own way and so on. I don't have any problem with him holding either one of those two opinions. I think it is worth commenting on when your opinions are in direct 180-degree conflict with itself. I think that's a literary form. Man in conflict with himself. Man against nature, man against God, man against himself. When your own rules, when you freak out, when people apply to your own rules and throw tantrums or deny or lie about it, that's when I think it's legitimate to say, ask whether or not you're a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're clearly not interested, because clearly your desire to ride a particular hobby horse is outweighing your desire to be true to your own system. And that's where I think it's fair to ask people, however accurate your information, whatever your story might be, you clearly have another agenda here, because you won't change your mind and you won't caveat and you won't acknowledge that anyone else might have has a different point of view that might be equally valid. Something else is going on here. And it's legitimate to ask what that is.
Well, and I'm just sitting here listening to you and thinking, well, we do that too. You know,
we're
name callers and you know, get mad at the Tea Party and so forth. And
I do.
Maybe all of us have had far too much influence from Newt Gingrich and made politics this kind of to play it his way. And I'm more than willing to get more wedded to ideas and less name calling and less kind of barking.
Now I have to push back against that.
Okay.
Just a little bit.
I knew you would.
And here's the reason. I will not unilaterally disarm ever.
No, oh no.
Ever again. I will not do it ever again.
I agree with you.
I have been through the 90s when it was, well, if we just were civilized and treated people nicely and engaged them at an idea level.
Yep.
And they gutted us.
Yep.
And if we just give them what they want, if we just compromise, and they impeached Bill Clinton over nothing.
Yep.
So no. There are people, there are categories of people. This is where it cracks me up that people on my side of the aisle can't understand that there are actual differences and subtleties and nuances among their own people, mm-hmm. among groups of people. Mm-hmm. There are in fact issues where both sides of the question are worth considering. Mm-hmm. There are questions where it's not. I think actually you want to get to the newsroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to just talk about, well, just because our friend Blagenfreude has mentioned the newsroom to us many times. And now that we've run out of TV shows to watch over the summer, we've been.
And so people who make a fetish out of centrism, who will report when there isn't two sides to a story.
Yeah.
Or who insist that.
Have to make one up.
Are just as pernicious as people who insist when it's their thing. There's only one side to the story. And any other point of view is illegitimate and argued from bad faith. Those two groups of people have more in common with each other than either of them have with me.
Yep.
So,
yep.
On to the newsroom.
Well, you like it a lot more than I do.
I do.
And I was never a big West Wing fan also, just because the sledgehammer that is used to write this stuff, even though it's porn for people that agree with me politically, it's heavy handed. And they do use 2020 hindsight to be right all the time.
Yes.
That's good for them. But it's not. I sit and watch it and enjoy it. And I like the relationships and so forth. But the heavy handed political stuff that's right in my wheelhouse politically.
Yeah.
It bugs me when it's that heavy handed. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
yes,
that's me. You love it.
I like it. Yeah. I see, you're a
big West Wing fan, too. You're always trying to show me West Wing videos. And
I am. I think you can see more of the bolts and seams of the writer mm-hmm. in this one than you can in West. I think the West Wing had, good times and bad times. It was good. It was really good. Mm-hmm. It was thoughtful, and it was, and the issues they took on were legitimate. They also cheated by making the president, you know, a Nobel Prize winning economist who was also a governor for four terms. They gave liberals the perfect liberal president. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they made Republicans largely mustache twirling villains, but they really very accurately pointed out that in between these two fictional camps, there were people who were trying to make Republicans act less vicious and crazy. And those people were being systematically drummed out of the party. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's why I think it is, I am very anxious to be persuasive with a centrist. Uh-huh. I will go after if they make a fetish of it, I'll go after that as intellectual laziness or a desire to avoid making hard decisions. But they've based their belief on something. You know, they've erected a set of scales and said on this side, and I'm going to stand right in the middle and say both sides. Mm-hmm. And if I can get after them to really look at what is actually on both sides of that scale, I might be able to persuade them. I am never going to be able to persuade someone who votes for Michelle Bachmann.
Right.
Ever.
And I think that's why there's a big difference between going after boots on the ground Republicans and going after those who have been elected to public office and those who have been hired by the media to do a job.
Yeah.
And I hope we keep our focus on that rather than on what you call and what I've called meat sticks.
Yeah. Well, and there are. and I'm going to stick to the, I'm going to stick to my premise that there is a categorical difference between people who turn on Fox News and turn on Rush and think that they're listening to people who aren't lying to them.
Yeah.
And people who insist that Rush Limbaugh is exactly the same as Rachel Maddow.
Yep.
Those two groups are very different.
You know, both sides.
Yeah. And I was raised a good Midwestern boy to give everybody the benefit of the doubt and see both sides of everything and be polite and nice. And it's taken me a long time to overcome that. And it's still my
default. And I'm with you on the disarmament thing. I really am. It's got to go. We cannot, as you say, unilaterally disarm from the standpoint of being fierce in standing up for truth. So yeah.
And if you come after me as a member of a group and you call us all communist, anti-American traitors.
Right.
Or you call us all Obama drunk cultists. Then I reserve the right to come back at you at exactly the same decibel level and point out that you're wrong. And that should not be a surprising thing. But apparently sometimes it freaks.
Well, and if you think it's nasty now, wait till Hillary announces.
Ha!
Okay.
By that time, I'll have given up blogging and I'll just be
all doing, Hey, each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's kitty is Scrappy. Like many internet kitties, she will not wake up just so you can take a picture. Of course not. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. We do love hearing from you, even when you're mad at us. That's just fine. It's a family fight. Oh, and speaking of family fights, I think we're going to be on Matt Filipovich's show next week.
Oh, that should be fun.
We'll let you all know on the Facebook page and so forth if we're going to do that. Feel free to write us. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions!
Yay!
Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Hey, Driftglass, how are the internet kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the internet kitties can't help but notice how downhill everything has gone in Egypt since they stopped worshiping cats.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast. We're going to do a little twist for the 4th of July weekend.
Uh-huh.
We're not going to do Science Fiction University because, you know, theology pays a lot better than science fiction trivia, let me tell you.
Everyone knows that. Everyone knows that. All my friends who were philosophy majors.
Yeah, they're all rich, right?
Well, the one who went into playing rock and roll is actually doing quite well.
Yeah, well.
The other ones are, none of them are teaching or in any way using their philosophy chops.
No. But so we're going to do Bible Bitch.
Yes, we are.
Bible Bitch. That's not scriptural, but it is special.
So anyway, this person dropped into my comment section. I did not publish this as a comment.
Oh.
I clipped off because I didn't want you to see it.
Right.
So they secretly sent this email to me. I also need to do a better job than putting out my email address, which is driftglass99@gmail.com.
That's where you can write directly to Driftglass and bypass me altogether.
And send your personal disappointments to me. Blue Gal has nothing to do with my crazy ass opinions over here.
And by the way, when I'm talking with Driftglass about white guys waving their dicks around, I'm actually specifically talking to and about Driftglass. I'm not talking about anyone in our audience, so please don't take that personally.
Yes, in fact, I'm doing it right now. That's how I podcast. Pants off.
Never wear your panties to a podcast. Okay,
exactly.
We're really getting off topic here.
Well, I thought
we were going to talk about the Bible.
There's a topic? Yes. and again, people waving their genitals around has nothing to do with the Bible.
Or theology.
Yeah. Uh-huh. At all.
Right.
All right.
Spilling your seed.
Exactly. Upon the ground.
Yeah. Okay.
Naughty, naughty. So anyway, this person dropped these comments into my comment section and thought it would be fun to turn the tables and have Mrs. DG answer, or Blue Gal if you prefer.
Okay.
Answer the questions. The topics are religion and the craft of writing.
Hmm.
And I'm not going to say whether they're fair or unfair. I'm just going to – and there's 13 questions because there were 13 disciples. Actually, there's 12 disciples. Actually, there are 14 disciples.
Never mind. Let's not get into that.
You ready?
Yeah.
So question one, what is the Q document? Hint, Matthew and Luke.
Yeah. The Q document is the original text that from which Matthew and Luke were derived. It appears. Mm-hmm. They're an actual history text written on papyrus, I'm sure, or sheep's bladder or something. But it's clear that the commonality between Matthew and Luke are that the stories came from the same document. And it's
very good.
It's called the Q document.
Can you tell me what Q stands for? And not
I used to know that.
Not the alien. Not the alien
no,
from Star Trek.
I used to know that.
It's a German word.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to mispronounce it. It's Quella or Q-U-E-L-L-A.
Okay.
Source, which means source or
source,
spring.
Okay. See. Uh-huh. And yeah, German. I took German in graduate school when I was at the Divinity School, and it's amazing how little German I know for how much German I've taken.
Yeah, believe me.
I know bestimmt. Bestimmt means certainly.
Mm-hmm.
Bestimmt. Okay.
It is so, I will interject here only to say that it says something that I know more Yiddish than I know Spanish, even though I took Spanish in high school.
Oh, yeah. 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 All right. Next question.
Good. Very good. True or false? Hitler. Uh-oh. We just broke the Godwin's law.
All right.
Hitler was born a Catholic, raised a Catholic, died a Catholic.
False.
True.
Oh.
And he has never been excommunicated.
Oh, holy shit. All right.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, as I recall my history, the only time they took there's supposed to be one of the, Jesus's t-shirt mm-hmm. that he wore on the cross.
Yeah.
You know, I was crucified. All I got was this lousy t-shirt thing. is held in, somewhere in the rafters in the upper stories of the cathedral at Trier. And the only time it has been lowered, it's been lowered for people to see like two or three times in history. One of those times was when Der Fuhrer asked to see it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Shroud of Turin.
No, this was the burial cloth. This was the actual, you know, you were killed. He was killed in this.
Oh, wow.
This was what he was wearing.
Wow.
And that the Roman guards shot craps for.
Okay.
And so forth. Anyway, I'm sure I get my history wrong. But yeah. Yep. Born, raised, and died a Catholic and has never been excommunicated.
Wow.
All right, here's the craft of writing. What's the minimum number of words in a novel?
As opposed to a novella?
As opposed to all other forms, novella, short story, etc.
I don't know.
50,000.
Okay.
So next time you get on my ass about writing a novel, 50,000 words, are you crazy? That's a lot of words.
You could do it.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Okay. All right, what's the maximum number of words in a vignette?
Oh, shut up. I don't know these things.
Okay. 400. I didn't know that either.
Okay, I didn't know that either. No, okay. That's very interesting.
That's very interesting. That's a short, shorter flash fiction. That's how I think. That's the marketing slot for those things or mm-hmm. genre. What is the indefinite personal pronoun?
The indefinite personal pronoun.
Yeah.
You?
He.
He.
Yeah.
Oh.
Although I will accept you.
I blame the patriarchy for that.
Yeah. I blame the fact that I got 4 pages into the MLB, minor language.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just threw it away.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Next. who was most likely the Roman emperor when Jesus was alive?
Oh. I believe it was Claudius.
Think Star Trek.
Oh, really? Nero?
Think middle name.
Tiberius?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
See?
Tiberius was before Claudius. So, that's interesting. Okay. Yeah.
All right. What's the difference between a regular nail and a crucifixion nail?
Ooh.
Other than the aisle you get them at Lowe's.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crucifixion nail, I believe, doesn't have a head.
Oh, good. Well, that's not the answer I would have been given here.
Okay.
The Romans made special nails for crucifixions like regular nail, but much longer.
No, well, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. All right.
All right.
I was guessing, so.
How old is the King James Bible?
Oh.
I will accept a rounding up to the nearest century.
Okay. Well, it was written in the 1600s, I believe. Is that right?
You are correct.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay.
The
1611,
answer
is, something like that.
Oh, man, you're good. It says 402 between 1604 and 1611.
Yeah.
Damn, baby. Not that I don't know you're smart, but damn. Okay, what is a Zen beginner? This is a...
Yeah, I know about Zen beginners.
Uh-huh.
Has to do with monkey mind and someone who is everyone. Everyone is a Zen beginner.
That's a good answer. The answer I've been given is the beginner sees many possibilities where the expert sees but few.
Oh, okay.
Okay. It's all right. All right. The word is Spartan. When is it capitalized and when is it not capitalized?
It's capitalized when it's a noun and it's not capitalized when it's an adjective.
Did you actually write the question?
Because that
is verbatim the answer, but good for you. In that order, as a matter of fact.
I did not write that question.
If churches can't be taxed, how come they still pay for water, sewer, sidewalks, etc.?
Those aren't taxes.
Very good. There's
those
a second.
Are fees for service.
Damn. Okay. I'm humbled. I would have fumbled for the answer, but you got that exactly right. Technically, tax is money that goes to the general fund, but these are fees. Way to go. Question number 12. There is a way for a woman to become a Buddhist monk. How?
She is reincarnated as a man.
Very good.
That's a joke that's been made around on Facebook. So I have to give credit where credit's due on that.
Well, the author credits the movie Beyond Rangoon, but Facebook is also acceptable. Very nicely done. All right, last question. According to the Bible, what is the one problem that stumped both God and Jesus?
Oh, okay. Both God and Jesus.
Yeah,
wow.
That's a very clever question.
Okay, it's got to be a clever question because it's not scriptural. I can tell you that.
It is.
Okay.
Unless you're a complete predestination freak.
Okay.
It's all ordained anyway, so what does it matter?
Problem. Well, I'm thinking about what problem stumped God. That would have something to do with the Garden of Eden. Or Job. And it also stumped Jesus.
Mm-hmm. I'll try for a hint.
Okay, or try for a hint.
It's having to do with the people that work for you.
Oh, okay. So it has to do with Satan and Judas. Is that the idea?
Very good.
So what do you do with a bad employee?
How to keep your subordinates loyal.
Yeah. That's good. That is clever.
That is.
Yeah.
But again, it's divine. It's all divine providence, so that explains everything.
Thank you. Those are good questions. Now, you give credit. Who gave?
I don't know.
They must have a log on, or was it anonymous?
I believe this was anonymous.
Thank you very much, Anonymous, for sending those in. That was great.
And if I miss, because I have to actually post it and then delete it, and then so I was doing this rather quickly, so I might have drop the ball on the person who the name of the person tagged on at the end of this, but I thought I copied everything off the question.
Okay.
So well, whoever it was,
publish it now, and thank you very much. We deeply appreciate it, and I love you. And we're going to get on with recording the podcast now.
All right. Very good. Well done, baby.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I think my score's higher than yours given day.
Yeah. You crushed it. You crushed it.
I certainly crushed the date of the. Mm-hmm. Of the King James Version of the Bible.
Yeah, I would have guessed like 1970. But that's the new way,
no,
Bible.
That's
the word.
Well, there's that. I mean, there's been a lot of modern translations in the past 50 years. But you might be thinking, if you're thinking about something 70s along those lines or 80s, the Book of Common Prayer has been. You want to go back, if you want the real Book of Common Prayer, you want to go back to 1928.
Uh-huh.
That's the one with the sexist language in it, but also the really beautiful language that everybody remembers from the movies. If you're doing a wedding, you want to that old book.
That's right. You went to that one for the
absolutely. When I had to read at a wedding, and I told the bride when I met with her that, look, the reason we're doing it is not because God wants us to. It's because when you watch the old black and white Father of the Bride type movies where there's a wedding, it's the 1928 Book of Common Prayer service that they use. And I looked out in the audience during this time when I was reading from that. And sure enough, there's, you know, the middle-aged women out there all have tears in their eyes because this is the wedding. You know,
right.
This is what people remember.
This is stagecraft.
Stagecraft, absolutely. Yeah. Not ordained, just this is how you do it because it's what plucks those heartstrings, people.
And wedding, the marriage is about you and the person you love.
Yeah.
declaring before whatever divinity you believe in or none that you're going to be together forever.
Before the community.
But the wedding.
Your family, yeah.
The wedding is the stagecraft. Marriage can be done in private.
Yeah.
The wedding is a matter of, if you want it, is a matter of performance.
Yep.
In front of an audience.
In front of an audience.
And learn from the best, baby. Steal from everybody and learn from the best.
All right, darling. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye.